KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Brian Fogel won Netflix its first feature documentary Oscar with his 2017 Russian doping exposé, Icarus. Critics at Sundance lavished praise on his latest film, The Dissident, about the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. So did Netflix call to lock up the rights?
Radio silence. Not a single global streamer stepped up with an offer, not for a penny, not for $10, not for $10 million, not anything.
Fogel's film exposes how Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman's regime not only killed Khashoggi, but brutally persecutes other dissidents and their families. The filmmaker explains why his project had streamers and studios running scared. Eventually, indie film champion and Briarcliff Entertainment CEO Tom Ortenberg stood up. The Dissident made it to theaters and now to streaming. Ortenberg also joins us today. But first on the news banter, Trump dumped from Facebook. But is that enough? Stay tuned. It's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my colleague in banter, Matt Bellany. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So things have been pretty crazy at the moment, still are pretty crazy as we are talking. We saw this past week the assault on the Capitol, and we subsequently saw Facebook and Twitter dealing with many, many calls, you know, and this is hardly the first time that there have been calls to silence Donald Trump on these social media platforms where he stirs up the kind of people who turned up and ran through the Capitol. Facebook finally indefinitely suspended him through the rest of his term from being on Facebook, and Twitter temporarily suspended him. This comes at a very fraught time for these big social media companies. They've been under tremendous pressure, and this has been ongoing. You know, the debate, does Donald Trump, because he's president, not get suspended because whatever he says is newsworthy, or do you silence him when he is dangerously provocative? But, you know, we have a new administration coming in, and these big social media companies, they don't have much friends on the left or the right. You know, both sides have issues with them.
Yeah, if you talk to people on the right, they still believe that there's a conspiracy among social media companies to downplay and silence conservative voices, even though if you look at the top performing posts on Facebook, the numbers disagree with that assessment. And then on the left, you have people who have been saying, listen, great, Mark Zuckerberg, you kicked Trump off the platform 13 days before he's out of office. What about the previous 4 years where he's been spreading lies, misinformation, misleading information, and riling up his supporters to the point where we see a literal assault on democracy? And that's a big problem for these companies, because I would not be surprised to see real action on the Section 230 provision of the federal code, which gives these social media companies a free ticket out of liability for the things that people say and do on the platforms. There will be a reassessment of that. I don't know if there will ultimately be some kind of action, but because it's coming from both sides of the aisle, I could see it as one of the issues that unites Congress to do something about it.
Yeah. And I mean, this Facebook thing, you know, Trump himself, I don't think is so much the issue on Facebook. It's this toxic misinformation. And Facebook isn't the only guilty one. You know, YouTube, 60 Minutes just did a thing about this poor father of a child who was killed at Sandy Hook, who had to appear in makeup on camera to disguise himself because they've been so persecuted by these lunatics who say the thing was a hoax, and his family's had to move multiple times. There was another woman who the same conspiracy people decided was the person who brought coronavirus into the world somehow, and her life has also been made hell. And YouTube is a big purveyor of this stuff as well, and I would expect the lawmakers would take a look at that too.
Yeah, it would apply across the board. And it gets to the question of what responsibility do these platforms have? Most Americans would be surprised to learn that one person, Mark Zuckerberg, controls the media ecosystem that they see on Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and others. That, I think, is alarming to a lot of people. And it was sort of always kind of known, but now we're seeing a very real world consequence of that. And I think people are just going to get fed up with it.
Yeah, I mean, we saw him working the Trump guys, and now he's going to have to pivot hard, and I think it may be too late. We'll see. Meanwhile, let's turn to the whole Warner Media experiment. They put all the 2021 movies on the HBO Max platform the same day they open in theaters. Obviously, theaters are very limited right now. And even before they did that, they had decided Wonder Woman was going to go on the platform, Wonder Woman 1984. And, you know, it's almost contradicted the premise of their whole thing in a way, in that the good news from the point of view of people who are fans of movie theaters was that to the degree that people could go to theaters, they did appear to go to the theaters to see Wonder Woman on the big screen. And the other part of the equation is, how did it do for the HBO Max platform? That is something I think we're not going to know for quite a while. And it's, they put out some vague thing like, this is great, it's doing great, but we don't know what that means.
Yeah, and I don't know how promising those box office numbers were ultimately anyways, because yeah, there was a $16 million opening weekend, which was the largest of the pandemic and did show that there was an appetite to see this movie in theaters, even though it was available on streaming. But over the Christmas break, those numbers did not really improve and were used to high multiples over the holidays. And I think what ultimately happened there was there is a fanboy audience that is going to go opening weekend, but
or a fangirl from Wonder Woman, but go on.
Sure. Fangirls as well. And then everybody else said, okay, either I'm not interested or I'll just watch it on TV. The numbers in China were not very good overseas, not even nearly approaching what Tenet did, which was the first big movie to open during a pandemic. So ultimately, the box office seems kind of muted here. And then we're going to see some of the initial numbers that we've seen from some of these trackers have suggested that there is very high interest in HBO Max over the holidays, which would accrue to Wonder Woman being there. We'll see when they announce subscriber numbers. But overall, I think it's very early to declare whether this experiment is a hit or a miss. We'll see the next movie, this Denzel Washington movie, The Little Things, is the next Warner's movie that would have come out in theaters alone. It is now going to be the hybrid model, and we'll see what that does.
Yeah, I know Warner's managed to make a deal with the filmmaker and Denzel Washington, who, as I've reported, was not at all happy to find that his movie was being dropped onto the streaming service with no warning or discussion beforehand, but they've made a deal. In terms of Wonder Woman, you know, I'm going to stick with my hypothesis, which is that they knew the movie wasn't that strong. I mean, at least in my world, what I've seen, my nephew told me he left in the middle of watching it with a friend. People have told me they fell asleep. You know, everything in Hollywood is a one-off experiment. It's maybe Wonder Woman wasn't very good and they knew it and they didn't mind, you know, just putting it on there and try to goose the streaming platform, which is the big thing that everybody's focused on Wall Street right now. And maybe people churned out quickly afterward, which in a way would be a shame because I actually think the HBO Max site has an immense amount of great stuff, but trying to get people to figure out what it is and where it is and break through the clutter is always the problem.
You know, I just think that they knew what they had. And this if they were going to do this, this was the time to do it. Maybe that movie would have dropped off a cliff after the opening weekend anyways. So, you know, we'll never know. There's a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking going on. But the interesting comparison is what the Disney movie Soul did, because that movie got rave reviews. Mm-hmm. And some of the projections on the kind of Disney Plus subscriber activity around Soul was less than Wonder Woman. So, you know, maybe it's just the type of movie. It's not necessarily whether it's good or bad.
I think when it comes to Soul, you have the advantage of a movie like that when it's kids. It's really not a kids movie in truth, but it's an animated film. As you know, Matt, as a dad, your kids watch things that they like over and over and over again, and that keeps subscribers around. And that's not something that Wonder Woman is going to, I think, deliver with big numbers for Warners.
Oh, God. Could you imagine seeing Wonder Woman again?
I will abstain from answering that question. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, former editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter.
Jamal Khashoggi, prominent Saudi journalist and Washington Post columnist, has gone missing after visiting his country's consulate in Istanbul.
He was last seen entering Saudi Arabia's consulate seeking paperwork to marry his fiancée.
His fiancée saw him go in at 1 p.m. and was still waiting for him at 1 a.m.
Brian Fogel's latest documentary is The Dissident, now available on demand. The film explores the horrific murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, perpetrated by Saudi Prince Mohammed bin Salman's brutal regime. Just 6 months before Khashoggi was killed in October 2018, the Saudi prince went on a getting-to-know-you tour of Hollywood. Rupert Murdoch hosted a dinner for him attended by many top industry executives with eyes on Saudi money. But a few months after Khashoggi's murder, Endeavor, the parent company of top talent agency WME, returned a $400 million Saudi investment. The Dissident follows others who are working to carry on Khashoggi's legacy, including his fiancée, Hatice Cengiz, who's ceaselessly trying to hold Khashoggi's killers accountable. There's also Saudi activist Omar Abdulaziz, who at the time of filming was in hiding in Montreal.
Jamal warned me.
This kind of work might get you killed.
Once you start working with us, you're not just a journalist. You're a dissident.
While Omar just barely made it out of Saudi Arabia, his brothers back home have been imprisoned and tortured. Fogel has been on the show before to talk about Icarus, the film that followed Russian whistleblower Grigory Rodchenkov, who revealed that Vladimir Putin's anti-doping program for athletes was really a doping program. Rodchenkov now lives under witness protection. Icarus won the Oscar.
The power of Icarus was that when it released in August 2017, despite the fact that the story had already been written about in the New York Times and been covered in global news and press, the film actually changed the true court of public opinion. And the power of it being on Netflix ultimately led to the IOC, the Olympic Committee, banning Russia from the 2018 Olympic Games. And so this was a huge impact. I felt like I had a tremendous burden, a responsibility to continue on that path of trying to find stories, make films that could have impact. And at the same time, I was looking for a thriller. I was looking for something that was going to be cinematic. And as I looked and looked for what that project would be, in those first 2 weeks of October 2018, the story of the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, which, you know, captivated the world, this story checked these boxes for me. And I became very intrigued. And then, you know, obviously not only the details behind the story, but the fact that here's his fiance believing that she's going to marry this man to never see him again, and the emotional loss of that. And Omar, the Saudi dissident in Canada, who literally was living in self-exile like Jamal in fear for his own life. And I said, you know, if I could get Hatice, Omar, and then ultimately the Turkish government to tell me their stories, allow me to embed with them and work with me exclusively, I think this could be the next film that I want to make.
So you set out to do that. I mean, these are people, in the case of the Saudis, who literally murdered and dismembered a journalist. Did you just say, well, you know, I'm just going to do this anyway?
You know, I don't try to allow fear to come into the equation for me as to whether or not I want to take on a subject matter or a film. I look more at, you know, is this a story that me and my creative team can tell? And, you know, in bringing Hatice and Omar into the story and building what was months and months of trust with them, these are the people I made the film for. You start thinking about your own safety or these kind of what ifs, then I think it prevents the work.
It's just quite a journey for you as a filmmaker. So you do get all this access. You make your film. You go to Sundance. Everybody's like, this is amazing. And then there's nothing. I assume you would have thought your home Netflix would be welcoming to you, but we have to point out that Netflix also caved when Hasan Minhaj criticized the Saudis in his show, Patriot Act. So were you surprised? Was there a chat? What happened there?
You know, as you said, we go to Sundance. We couldn't have asked for better critical response, for a better audience response. And Reed Hastings was even at the premiere. And then in the days following our premiere and the other screenings, radio silence. Not a single global streamer stepped up with an offer, not for a penny, not for $10, not for $10 million, not anything. None of the major studios stepped up with an offer. And the message to my sales agent was very clear. We think the film's great. This is not for us. And when you look behind that, you can understand this. We are in a day, the New York Times published a whole story on the five CEOs of the major global streamers, whether it was Tim Cook in regard to the Gawker project or Reed Hastings in regards to Hasan Minhaj. And in his response for pulling Hasan Minhaj off the air, he said, "We're not a truth to power company. We're an entertainment company." Mm. And what that message is the same thing that we're seeing in regards to doing business with China. The risk assessment that has happened within these big global media companies is, you know, human rights be damned. What's more important is that we're able to do business and grow in these regions. And, you know, and Netflix is a different company than it was 3 years ago. Their growth is how to grow internationally. And so why upset a region? Why put the company at risk of the hack? We see what they did to Jeff Bezos. God, if I was a CEO or top-level management, I wouldn't want to think that they could do that to me. You know, you're going, hey, you got these kind of technologies, these kind of skills. Maybe you hack our platform and all of a sudden Amazon's down. I mean, who knows? And so these decisions are clearly weighing in to the decision behind content that tackles subject matter like this. And to that extent, look, I'm grateful to Tom Ortenberg, who is on the phone.
Yes, we are going to get to Tom Ortenberg right now. Tom, now, so Tom, you have had quite the long and winding career in this business. You are now, you have this, it's a new company. I mean, I'm trying to, you founded it in what, 2017, 18?
I founded Briarcliff Entertainment in 2018. We founded the company kind of in response to another film that needed distribution and that was too hot to handle for some, and that was Michael Moore's last film, Fahrenheit 11/9. I had worked with Michael before on Fahrenheit 9/11 and on Sicko, and years later he makes Fahrenheit 11/9, brilliant film, and nobody would touch it, and we were just in touch because we're in touch, and I said, let's talk about it and let's see if we can do this together, and so I started Briarcliff Entertainment, and Fahrenheit 11/9 was our first release. And yeah, it's I'm in the business of getting people to see movies. And unfortunately, too often, brilliant, yet for some controversial films have difficulty being allowed to find their audience. And so on the one hand, I've certainly worked on a lot of big, broad commercial movies that I'm very proud of, a few that I'm less proud of. But being able to work with people like Brian on films like The Dissident is really the reason that I'm in this business, the reason that I got into film and the reason that I made film a career was because of movies like this. So I'm pretty thrilled to be in this position right now.
When did you become aware of The Dissident?
As fate would have it, this was the first Sundance in almost 25 years that I didn't attend. I was recovering from some minor surgery, but I had a couple of colleagues there who called me from the theater after the movie played and said, just saw an extraordinary movie. You got to chase this one down. And so started pursuing it. Brian was kind enough to screen the film for me at UTA a couple of weeks after Sundance. Loved it. We started to get to know each other and started working on a plan to jointly release the film independently. And here we are. And I couldn't be more proud of the film, of Brian, and my association with it.
Coming up after a short break, Fogel tells us why he thinks Amazon didn't make an offer for The Dissident, even though Jeff Bezos owns the newspaper that employed Jamal Khashoggi. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Don't
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? Critics rave The Greatest Hits is a music-infused romance that hits all the right notes and the most original time travel story in years. Featuring music by Nelly Furtado, Beach House, Jamie XX, and more. Watch The Greatest Hits, now streaming on Hulu.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. We're talking to filmmaker Brian Fogel and Tom Ortenberg, the head of Briarcliff Entertainment. Thanks to Ortenberg, the dissident about the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi landed in theaters, the ones that were open anyway, on Christmas Day. The film is now available on demand, but you won't find it on any of the big streamers. None of them bid on the movie. Tom Ortenberg has experience handling challenging films and knows just how risky the movie business can be. In 2015, he was the head of Open Road Films, the distributor of Spotlight, which won Best Picture at the Oscars. But just a year and a half after that, Open Road was bought up and eventually declared bankruptcy. Briarcliff Entertainment is Ortenberg's new company, and while Fogel is grateful to have found a distributor, his original plan for The Dissident was to go to a big streamer.
So the film was funded in full by the Human Rights Foundation. And so HRF was never looking at this as a financial model. They were not looking at it as how do we get our money back and how do we get the biggest sale. They were looking at it as how do we have the most impact and to bring change.
You want the world to see the movie, yes.
Had Netflix or Apple or Amazon or any one of these companies came in, I mean, they could have offered anything for the film. And the Human Rights Foundation would have accepted that offer as long as they knew that they were going to support the release and support the streaming. You know, so we're now in, you know, a financial model, which is fine. But, you know, people will need to find this film on VOD. They'll have to find it in theaters. And it's wonderful and it's good and I'm optimistic. It just, every time I turn on my Netflix and under most popular movies, there's Icarus. Award-winning films, there's Icarus. Thrillers, there's Icarus. And I go, here we are 3 years on, and people are still discovering this film. And so, you know, it's my hope that after we get through our VOD window, that perhaps we will be able to land on a major streamer that will take this film on, as the risk will be out of it of being, you know, an original.
I understand, I guess, you know, if Netflix wants to say we are not in that business. The one where I don't see, yes, he was hacked, but Jeff Bezos, you know, Jamal Khashoggi worked for Jeff Bezos at the Washington Post. Jeff Bezos is in the film attending his memorial service. I would think Jeff Bezos would say, screw these guys, I'm going to stream this film. Do you have any understanding of why that didn't happen?
Now, you would think, right?
Yeah, I think that.
And there he was at the memorial on stage going, we are here. You are not alone. And of course, he owns the Washington Post, and the Washington Post not only helped with the film, everybody that I interviewed on a journalist level for the film was at the Washington Post. And so clearly the Washington Post was in support of this film and would want this film to be seen. And here Amazon didn't take it. But, you know, I think we then look at 3 months ago, Amazon announced the acquisition of Souq, which is the Amazon of Saudi Arabia. And they have cloud server deals pending that, you know, that MBS and Bezos were trying to work out that were in the billions of dollars. So, you know, I think probably in Amazon's reasoning, they said, okay, this happened to Bezos. This is terrible. But we've got business to do here. Mm-hmm. And we already see what they've done to attack us. So why have a Twitter boycott of our company in that region as we grow to expand? And so unfortunately, we're seeing, and even the case of the world's richest man, who, what does it matter if they lose billions of dollars to support a guy who was murdered while working for your paper, is disappointing.
Brian's point is entirely correct, that people you would have thought would step up and would have good reason to step up have not to date stepped up. And that is really disappointing.
And Tom, I know your company's new and it's not gigantic yet, but do you have the means and the muscle to campaign for this film? Is that going to be a thing that you can do?
Yes, absolutely. And for a few reasons, one of which is the most important thing in any Academy campaign is get your movie seen. So we can do what we need to do to affect a positive result here. And the long list of supporters and endorsements that this picture has from the entertainment world, from the news world, from the political world, from the humanitarian world is incredible. And a lot of those are public already. A lot of them we will be unleashing over the next few weeks. But the picture has a ton of support. We're going to get the movie seen, and hopefully it will have all of the success it should have.
Well, you are fighting the good fight. Are you nervous, Tom? I mean, you know, this is, again, the people who have cyber capabilities, and they're not shy about killing people either.
You know, look, for starters, I'm mostly, this interview notwithstanding, I'm mostly behind the scenes.
We're here to make it a problem for you, Tom.
but I have not heard discouraging words on The Dissident, but I've gotten my share of death threats over the years because we've worked on some controversial films. I got death threats when we distributed Dogma. I got death threats on Fahrenheit 9/11. I got death threats when we worked with Bill Maher and Larry Charles on Religulous. I got death threats working on Amy Berg's brilliant documentary about abuse in the Catholic Church, Deliver Us From Evil. I got death threats working on Tom McCarthy and Josh Singer's brilliant film, Spotlight, which, of course, won us the Best Picture Oscar at Open Road. So,
I got death threats on Spotlight. Jesus.
It's crazy. And when I say I got death threats on Fahrenheit, which is true, but the amount of death threats and vile pointed at the filmmakers, Michael Moore on Fahrenheit, Kevin on Dogma, like that's really beyond the pale. I get emails and phone calls from anonymous people telling me that they're going to kill me and my family. But Brian and filmmakers are the ones who are really out front and dealing with that. But to answer your question, no, I'm not afraid.
Well, Brian, that sounds grim, but you have said that you choose to ignore these things. Or do you? I mean, is there anything you can do?
You know, what I saw with Icarus was that with great risk came great reward. And that reward for me wasn't the winning of an Academy Award. It was in knowing that I had saved someone's life. And to this day, whenever I'm able to be in contact with Gregory Rodchenkov, he always thanks me. And I go, "Why are you thanking me, Gregory?" He goes, "Because without you, I'd be dead. You saved my life." And when you're able to have something like that happen to you, and albeit at the time, I didn't know exactly that that's what I was doing, it has a weight on you. And so when I looked at making The Dissident, on one hand, I said, okay, there's a brutal, awful, authoritarian dictator who murders people and beheads his opponents. On the other hand, there's a grieving widow in Hatice Cengiz who desperately needs to have her story told. And there is a young Saudi self-exiled dissident who can never go see his family again, whose brothers are sitting in a jail tortured, whose friends are locked away, on top of the thousands and thousands of others. This is why I make these films. So, you know, I'm going to continue to make films like this. And I don't think about what that fallout may be, because these people's stories and their journeys are so much tougher than mine. And I'm just honored that I have the creative team and the ability to get resources behind projects to go tell stories like this.
Brian Fogel is the director of The Dissident, and Tom Ortenberg is the founder and CEO of Briarcliff Entertainment. Thank you both so much for doing this.
Delighted to be interviewed, so thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Kim.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with help this week from Desmond Taylor. Paul Smith mixed the show. You can stream The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts on the KCRW app. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.